Hello, everyone, and welcome to edition number 5 of New Thought on the News. I'm Barbara Fields, Executive Director of the Association for Global New Thought, the organization that brings you this series on the third Thursday of every month at this time. To those of you who have been following the series so far, welcome back. And to those joining us for the first time, we're glad to have you with us because New Thought on the News has really stimulated some incredible dialogue and food for thought that you can now be a part of. So the first thing that it is my pleasure to do today is to introduce you to today's panelists. Dr. Carol Carnes retired from pulpit ministry in 2013 after 26 years as spiritual director of Centers for Spiritual Living in several locations. She served as education director of education for the international organization as a member of the board of directors. She is the author of two books, The Way In and Skylark. She is regarded as one of the clearest New Thought teachers in the field today. Her wit and practical wisdom have endeared her to her many students who have gone on to become practitioners or ministers themselves. She carries on the tradition of New Thought to liberate religious thinking of superstition and dogma. Hey, Carol, how are you doing today? Thanks for being here.
I'm just great. Thanks, Barb. It's wonderful to be here. I think this is such a great thing we're doing.
And we also have Dr. Roger Teal, Mile High Church in Colorado. He's the senior minister and spiritual director and co-founder of the Association for Global New Thought, also the Synthesis Dialogues 1, 2, and 3 with His Holiness the Dalai Lama. He has served on the boards of the Interfaith Alliance of Colorado, the M.K. Gandhi Institute for Nonviolence, the Foundation for Affordable Housing, and the Community First Foundation. And that was a modest bio, Roger, because I know that you've been doing many, many wonderful things for as long as I've known you. How are you doing?
I'm doing great, Barbara. It's great to be back for another round on New Thought on the News. Glad to see so many folks are signing on.
Great. So we'd like to hear from you who have called in on the lines. Penny's going to turn on your mics for those of you who are calling today. And I'm going to count to three. This is just a fun part of the call because we don't have time to go around and have all of you introduce yourself and where you're from. But when I count to three, she'll activate your mics, and then I'd like you to just speak your name and where you're from into the whole group. And even though we won't be able to hear everything clearly that you speak, it will definitely establish the field of our collective presence here today in this space. Well, let's give it a go. One, two, three.
I'm ready. Alberta Coleman, Newark, Delaware.
Karen Lindberg.
Hey, Annette Cameron from Laurel, Maryland.
Hey. Alberta Coleman, Newark, Delaware.
Janet
Johnson,
Huntsville,
Alabama. Bobby Atkins, San Diego, California.
Thank you all. That's so fun. Well, before we settle into our discussion, let's begin with some centering into this sacred space, because that is what we're establishing here, and have a blessing from Carol and Roger.
All right, let's begin by knowing that there is one level of consciousness that is real, and that is infinite. And out of that infinite level of consciousness, each one of us draws our own mind power. Our source is within, without, and all about. We are all one, and we are all empowered by that same amazing presence and energy. It is intelligence. It is love. It is joy. Each one of us here today is expressing that beautiful intelligence and love with joy, with the energy of joy that lifts us out of the ordinary way of thinking into the possible. So we know that today great good occurs by means of all of us as we share our ideas and see through the appearance, through the truth that stands behind every human experience. God is all there is. Spirit is all there is. Life is good all the time. And we are the ones that can make the changes within that field that bring about ever, ever more good, more joy, more love, more intelligence. And so we give thanks that we're here today, and we know that as we begin, we start from a very high place indeed. And I turn this to Roger.
And I add my blessings to this beautiful stream of consciousness, as we deeply know in our heart of hearts that we're bonded together by this one life, this one power, and that we are here tonight on this call to share in the field of infinite ideas and divine possibilities, that our own hearts might open more fully, that our own consciousness might expand, and moreover, that each and every one of us might find the ways that we might shine greater light into this world that is so greatly seeking after the highest truths. So I bless each and every one of us as we attend to our divine appointment to let God be God in and through us. And I bless our moderator, Barbara Fields, and Penny, who supports her, and all the work that we are doing each in our own ways as we hold up the highest truth and shine the light. In a space of love and truth, we let this be so. And so it is.
So it is.
And so it is. Thank you, Carol and Roger. That put me in the right space. Before we begin our panel discussions, we'd like to take a moment to set the stage for this unique program. Some of you are here every week, some of you are newcomers. But let us just say that New Thought on the News is for spiritual beings who are very much concerned about and engaged in the real stories and circumstances that appear in our mainstream media every day. Spirituality based on the principles of New Thought is the foundation of our worldview, and we strive sincerely to connect these principles with our understanding of real-time events, whether they are taking place in our families, our communities, our nation, or in our world as a whole. But we all need support in this journey because, overwhelmingly, the news of the day is bad news. It's sensational and violent. It's filled with problems that we are told do not have solutions, or at least not ones within our grasp. No wonder so many of us struggle with depression, fear, or even apathy in the face of these odds. So New Thought on the News is here to remind us that this hopeless story we are presented with is not the truth, but only one interpretation, severely jaded by a perception of reality not in line with our spiritual principles. You, I, and our presenters today are here to collaborate and support one another in our choice to look at current events according to the spiritual principles that transcend the story being told by these merchants of doom and greed. We are not here on the third Thursday of each month to simply pretend that all is well, or that the very real and critical issues facing the world today are to be minimized or ignored as we meditate in some magical universal of denial. We are here to take responsibility as spiritually motivated citizens and to find realistic ways to engage with these issues. This is the only way we can become the agents of positive change we know ourselves to be and to lead others into doing the same. So now we'd love to hear from Carol and Roger in a little more depth. In the first part of the program, we ask Carol, and then Roger will follow, just to speak a little bit about the general vision and the theory of why and how New Thought spiritual principles can reframe the dialogue on world events in the news. So, Carol, why don't you begin?
I will. Thank you. Well, as Barbara stated so eloquently, it can be quite troublesome to watch the news these days. And we have the sense that we're here and the troublemakers are out there. Looking at the news, there is a slant to it, but some of these things, most of them are actually happening. What we do in New Thought is look at it on a deeper level. We have to remember something. Everything we see in the world is an effect of an inner cause. Now, it's the inner cause that New Thought is concerned about, because nothing changes until the inner cause changes. You know, I love the Buddha saying, nothing moves until mind moves, and nothing moves but mind. So we may sometimes feel that we don't have that much to do with global life, but we really do. As we talked about in the opening treatment, the opening affirmative prayer, we're all immersed in a field of consciousness. So we ask ourselves, what is it in our collective consciousness that has to move? What does our world tell us about our inner states of awareness? We can, of course, observe this in our individual lives and must, but for now, let's just look at what's evident in our shared reality. I think we can all agree we can observe the world in conflict, to put it mildly. Red and blue, right and left, black and white, masculine, feminine, dominance and victimization, culture against culture, the haves and the have-nots. In every case, there's a battle between two divergent energies. I don't think it's oversimplification to say we are at war with ourselves. This is an indication of a lack of integration within the species. I don't know how many of you have followed the work of John Hagelin, who is a part of the Transcendental Meditation Movement and also a physicist, but I would urge you to, as my daughter says, Googleize him. Find out more about John Hagelin. He really speaks to this beautifully. So he says you can measure the integration by looking at the brain. And it's been shown that in the great majority of people, the two hemispheres of the brain are not in sync. They're not integrated. They're each engaged in activity that does not match in wavelengths. And the only time real integration has been observed is in Tibetan monks and long-time practitioners of meditation. So this tells us that a deep inner rest integrates the brain. Well, that's fine. But what happens to the person or the culture who is the owner of such a brain? And let's think of the brain metaphorically as well. What happens in individuals is a simple peace arises, increased creativity, compassion, and joy, all the qualities that we associate with someone who is spiritually evolved. Now think of this collectively, because what we're doing individually is creating the collective. It's rather obvious that we are not integrated as a global brain, and I would urge you to read Peter Russell's book, The Global Brain. But what can be done about this? This is where our daily practice is so important. You and I, and with every meditation, every affirmative thought, every kind act, are actually influencing the collective on very subjective levels, but very powerfully. When a critical mass is achieved, we begin to see these effects in the world: more joy, more harmony, more peace, more compassion. That is actually beginning to happen. There is more compassion, more kindness, more people involved in doing good for other people than ever before. One of them is Nipun Mehta, a young adult who is doing great work in the world. But at the same time, and this is why it's so challenging and stressful to be alive right now as an aware human being on planet Earth. Excuse me. At the same time, we're seeing the effects and feeling the effects of the dying paradigm of an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. We are all expressions of this one something that's being all, and we can live together, not only in peace but in creative joy. We can thrive together. So most people I know who are fairly integrated see the warring factions on the news as the dying of the dinosaurs. But at the same time, their actions affect us, those dying dinosaurs. So we have to take countermeasures. We can't just watch the news and feel hopeless or worried. We have to take countermeasures in our own personal life, because what we see on the news is our story. It's not their story. It's the story of humanity right now. It's not the whole story, but it is a story of a large part of the whole. So those of you with Christian roots will remember Paul's message. Think on these things, the good, the true, and the beautiful. And I would also add, don't be afraid of the opposition. Jesus said, take up thy adversary very quickly and say, I'm not afraid of you. I release you to go your way and do no harm. That's the attitude that I try to take when I look at the news. I say, I'm not afraid of what I'm looking at. I'm seeing through this veil, this illusion, back into the possibility. I see, as the wonderful Dr. Michael Beckwith has said, every headline is a prayer request. So we have to remember that cause is always more powerful than the effects. Let us tend to the causes we are setting in motion and know they must have their effects. It's important for us to remember that on the spiritual level, all is well, all the time, meaning that each one of us is powerful beyond measure, and together we can make the change we wish to see in the world.
Thank you, Carol. That was very powerful and clear. So, Roger, would you like to follow on that?
I wish I didn't have to follow that. But yes, I agree. Very, very clear and very wonderful. And I would just add to compliment that wisdom that indeed we are witnessing in the headlines the progressive challenge of humankind, the yearning of humankind to rise up and become more. We don't often realize that that's the deep inherent drive amidst all the conflict, all the struggle, all the travesties that go on. But truly, we are deeply seeking to evolve and become. That's the deepest essence in our being. And so, as a student of consciousness, I've studied the great metaphysical teachers, among them, Dr. Holmes, Ernest Holmes, and I was struck a long time ago by his description of consciousness as an ever upward spiral of growth. And then later on, I was also led to become something of a student of spiral dynamics. And I think that also adds an interesting perspective on what's going on in the world. And this Claire Graves is the one who put together this elaborate model of consciousness as a series of dimensions or memes that is spiraling upward into higher and higher forms of complexity and effectiveness. And then others have taken on his work and continue to evolve it. But what I think is so powerful about this model is that as we look at the various dimensions that start with survival thinking and then that grew eventually into tribal thinking and then into the realization of the power of the individual, but it was the raw ego and it was an unevolved ego. And then beyond that, there was birthed the blue meme, which is all about order and rules, and a lot of the Orthodox religions emerged at this time. The Abrahamic religions emerged, especially during this time. And the spiral continued on. And what's interesting about all these spirals is that in the current prevailing dimension of consciousness, what would happen is that while it solved problems at one time, its inherent ways created new problems, and those new problems are insoluble to the meme that birthed them. And the only thing that can solve the challenges is the birth of another higher order of awareness. And out of that higher awareness comes more effective behaviors and responses. And that seems like a real panacea until even that blessing of a higher order creates a new set of problems. And in this whole order, as it progresses upward along the spiral, he's got two tiers that he mentioned. The first tier, thinking, is a number of these memes, ending with one that's the green meme, which is very egalitarian, ecological. Everybody has to have consensus and agree. Everybody matters. And it's a wonderful advance. But then he says there's another tier and a new set of memes emerging, second-tier memes. And the interesting thing is that we're relative newcomers to this second tier. And what distinguishes the first tier from the second is the first-tier memes are all driven to one degree or another by fear. All of them have various degrees of fear inherent within them. Even if they become more and more effective or more and more elaborate, higher forms of thinking, still fear is involved in all of them. Even the green meme, which is the ecological and the egalitarian meme, there's still fear in that. Fear that not everybody will agree, fear that everybody has to be on the same page, and that idealism there. But second tier memes, and there are only two identified at this point and the third emerging, those memes are identified as the beginning of love-driven consciousness. Consciousness anchored in, founded in love. And the most interesting thing that I think bears on our discussions tonight about the second tier is that it's a kind of thinking that embraces all of the other memes, all of the other ones. It integrates them. Carol talked about an integrated individual. It's in second tier that we take all of the memes and we see that each one has a purpose. Each one even has a blessing as well as a liability. And we integrate them together. We transcend and include them. And then we go to something higher driven by love. And as I look at the world scene, I see us seeking to truly become a species driven by love, motivated by love, with our default set at love. And ours is the challenge of seeing more and more progressively the damage done by fear-motivated news, fear-motivated responses and reactions in the world, and more humanity is trying to teach itself that God is love and that we can live by love, that we can turn the other cheek, that we can find methods and means and solutions through the heart and through also activating the feminine energetic within humankind, knowing that each of us is masculine and feminine energies. And as we open the heart and open into the feminine energies, I believe that our way will be shown. Up until then, we're just witnessing the struggle of getting ready to really surrender to that and let it all unfold. So I'll pause here and see where we go from here.
That's really lovely. Carol, did you want to comment at this point?
I will say touche.
I was thinking, Roger, as you were talking, that when you were discussing how the dilemmas of the old meme sets in Don Beck's Spiral Dynamics model can only be solved by new emerging memes, qualitatively different at another level, reminded me of that Einstein quote, that you can't solve problems from the level of mindset or consciousness from which they were created.
Exactly.
Sounds like we're speaking the same language. Another thing, a couple of other things agreed. No, did you want to follow on that?
No, go ahead.
Well, I was thinking about the wisdom of Vedanta, you know, the Buddhist practice of Vedanta, which basically speaks to non-dualism, because here we are caught in the West, at least, in this kind of pendulum swing of polarity thinking, where the pendulum just swings from, you know, one pole to the other, and it really promotes this us versus them thinking. But we know that in the new consciousness, that especially in the political news, the social and environmental news coming out today, that the real solutions are kind of to be found in the middle ground, and they're constantly responsive to the conditions that are arising. His Holiness the Dalai Lama calls that the middle way, you know, that somewhere in between the polarities there is a middle way where there is success for everyone. It's just so complex and difficult to find if you're not thinking from the right meme or the right mindset. So I just think this is a very rich discussion.
And if I may, it really does harken back to the integrated brain, too, physiologically, that if we are not integrated, if we haven't developed our whole brain, then we do tend to think from one polarity or another rather than thinking holistically. And the practice of meditation has really been shown dramatically that this does happen with regular practice, that people tend to use more of their whole brain and therefore their whole self, and they begin to think from the larger picture rather than from these polarities. So, you know, it's everything. We're affected by everything, and spiritual practice is so beneficial for these reasons. It tends to heal our split thinking, if you will.
Mm-hmm. Roger,
I'd add one thing to this too, and that is that breakthrough into a higher order of consciousness requires that we hold lightly the way we have been perceiving, the way we have been thinking, the way we have been contextualizing things, the mental models that we hold of things, and that we have the courage to leap into the unknown. Because it's in the unknown, beyond what we have currently grasped, that the higher order and the higher order of solutions dwells. And so often we just reference old opinions and old strategies, and we bandy about the current ideas. But synthesis and breakthrough happen when we leap into something greater and we have the courage to do that.
Yeah, and also, Roger, I was just thinking as you were speaking that it might be the razor's edge that they speak about in spirituality, to be able to live on in the relative world and see what needs to change without dwelling on trying to fix what's wrong, but at the same time hold a vision for the higher order and to actually do what we can every day to live it, but a little more, a little more, a little more every day. It isn't an either-or situation. We do have to know what's going on in the world, as Barbara said in the beginning, but we also have to have a bigger vision for what is possible.
Well, and this comes full circle into your meditation and into also the spiritual visioning process that our beloved brother and founder, co-founder of AGNT, Michael Beckwith, brought forth through his ministry, that being still and being receptive to something, even beyond that which we have ever known, in the stillness is the portal to our answers.
Absolutely. Now, before we move on to the second part of our dialogue, all of a sudden I was reminded of our friend, the late Dr. Robert Mueller. Both of you were at the Awakened World Conference in 1999 when Dr. Mueller, who was the former Assistant Secretary General to the United Nations, came to our conference and played the French national anthem on his harmonica. Do you remember that?
Yes, yes, that was wonderful.
Well, he was, you know, a preeminent political activist and somebody highly involved in these social concerns, but he was a deeply heartfelt and spiritual individual. His wife still lives in Santa Barbara, and I see her occasionally. And the last time I saw her, she reminded me that before Dr. Mueller died, he was very intent on finishing his book. I think it was something called 4,000 Visions, and that he would wake up in the middle of the night in order to jot down another vision for the world. And if people were to ask him and to say, why do you spend so much time doing this, he would say, well, nothing ever happened that didn't come from a vision. And so I think the most important part is to be really clear about what your vision is.
Right. And it's so easy to slip into what you don't want when you watch the news. You really do have to have a pair of eyes that can see through it and not necessarily even call it wrong, but that this is an indication that something greater is trying to happen, because it is.
Absolutely. Well, you know, I wonder if we might want to pause just for a second and see if we can take a comment or a question, not about any specific issue, but about the conversation in general, from people who are listening to the call. If you do have a brief comment or question on these general topics to add, you could go ahead and press 1 on your telephone keypad, and then I'll know that you're looking to contribute to the discussion. So there's one from Lynn. Penny, would you go ahead and turn on her mic? Lynn, go ahead. Lynn, are you there?
Oh, I think this is me. It's Rochelle. Lynn gave me this number, and my name is actually Rochelle. Hello?
Hi, did you raise your hand?
Yes.
Okay, go ahead.
Lynn, who I have encountered through our work on the Occupy movement, gave me this number, and I'm fascinated with the phone call. What I want to underline is the gentleman's comment about the feminine. I'm working on letting people know about something that the media has been hiding from us, that 500 million people in the villages of India live under the Panchayat Raj system, which requires 50% women in the decision-making and full representation of the minorities of every village. This is covering a population much larger than the United States and Canada combined, but nobody knows about it, because our media has kept it a secret. You can easily find it on the internet, but you have to know about it to look. It's called the Panchayat Raj. It's at the fulfillment of the dream of Kasturba and Mahatma Gandhi, and was brought into being by Rajiv and Sonia Gandhi. And yet nobody in the United States knows that it could be applied to every neighborhood in the world.
Could you give us the name of that movement again, so people could take a look at this when they have some time after the call?
Absolutely. It's the Panchayat Raj. It means the village rule.
How do you spell it?
PanchayatRaj. It's two separate words. Panchayat and then Raj, R-A-J.
Thank you.
Great. Thank you so much. We'll take one more before we move on. This is from Dr. Nancy Anderson. Hi, Nancy. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you. Thank you. Yeah, I'm so glad I tuned in, because at this moment in my life, this is where I'm really, really being challenged, because I really do know that out in this world there's a lot of things happening way beyond what our ordinary media is showing us, and I know that. And at the same time, I'm becoming absolutely aware that there is, okay, that there's really one power and there's really one action going on, and it is the omni-action of God. And that our work is to tune into that and let it work through us, because none of this stuff is happening at that level. So I really appreciate what you're saying tonight. And I think what I'm asking here is if there's any kind of specific ways that you use, this is Carol or Roger or Barbara, to actually look very clearly at some of the activities that are the effects of ignorance, sometimes very dangerous and horrendous effects, but to look at them clearly and really truly know. I mean, how do you do this so that you do become free of being caught up in a reactive sense, so that we do stay at the place where the answers can come through? I think this is so very, very important right now, because otherwise we just get angry and it does no good. So I'm turning it over right now.
That's a beautiful question and comment. Roger or Carol, did you want to mention a practice or something that you that personally helps you with that reactivity component?
Well, Reverend Nancy said it herself. Reverend Nancy was my teacher, by the way. She said none of this stuff is happening at the level of spiritual truth. And that means at the level of power, at the level of cause. None of this is happening. These are all effects of old thinking. So it's very important for us to, in this moment, think, for example, as we were talking about earlier, looking at what's happening, say, this is temporary. This is not a reality that can continue on its own. It has to have the participation of me. I don't give it that. I refuse to give my participation by using my mind in any way that would support this activity that I see on that news. Rather, I know something greater is trying to happen. So what I do is I immerse myself in what I believe to be spiritually true. I change my mind. I talk myself down. I remind myself of what I have learned over all these years of studying and contemplating and meditation. And the same way I talk myself out of fear in my own life, if something comes up, I think, oh dear, what's going to happen to me now? I talk myself out of it, because I have learned how to use the mind in a very specific way to do that. And what happens is, I'm not kidding myself. What I'm doing is opening up to this greater knowing that preceded my birth, but that I absolutely do have. And, you know, when you tell yourself a spiritual truth, you can feel it. You can feel it in your body. You're energized. And there's a quickening, and there's a sense of peace and a lack of fear that returns, and then you're in a really creative mode, and that's when you drop in your vision statements. This is what I know to be true. All is well on planet Earth. Humans are living together in harmony and balance and prosperity and love and joy. I insist on that becoming an effect in this life I am living. And what if everybody did that?
Then they'd all be ministers. Oh, this is great, really. You know, let's move on a little forward now, because we're really getting into this. And this is a few minutes that we've set aside for the call, so that Roger first and then Carol could share about more specifically about things that have been right on top in the news lately. And I'm going to ask you, Roger, if you would begin that.
I will, and let me just also begin by adding my personal sharing to what Dr. Nancy asked. And I also, in addition to what Carol said, I give myself the permission to grieve at the emotional level, because sometimes in New Thought we forget that we do have a feeling response to what's going on that shouldn't be ignored or denied. It's a part of our heart. It's a part of our humanity. And so when atrocities occur, I give myself permission to grieve them. And then I ask some expansive questions. I ask myself, how is what's going on a part of humanity's quest toward cosmic consciousness? How is this really about our questing? And then I also ask, what does this have to offer me about how I can live in the world, or how I might be able to bless the world? So I take those questions into my mind. At any rate, So going on, I would add that one of the more present topics in the news right now is all the budget dilemmas and the financial dilemmas, and the Congress at an impasse. And of course, they've had a quote breakthrough here of late, which is really just pushing the problem down the pathway until the new year, where after the holidays they can go at it again. And I think the interesting thing about this, for me, has been just studying how partisan politics really show how disunity consciousness plays itself out, and how the polarities that Carol Karn spoke about become battlegrounds rather than synthesis grounds. And the interesting struggle that our governmental system is having, as it seems to have become paralyzed or monopolized by special interest groups, and truly it's become a battle of parties and a battle of ideologies, very little concerned with the progress of humanity or our own country, but more or less with the powers and the monetary issues that are involved in this. And yet the rest of us sit around and wonder when something really constructive is going to come about. But I think for New Thought, we get to look at this through the lens of what it offers us in terms of really evolving our consciousness. And so I guess the questions that I think it puts out are, to what degree did any of us become enrolled in fear around this? Because indeed, I think part of the strategy of this whole thing is keeping us paralyzed in fear and looking for simplistic solutions, because that's usually what happens when fear is driving things, is that we come up with simplistic and ineffective solutions, but at least we have something to hold on to. But so I would invite all the listeners to just ask that question: to what degree did I fall into that, and what can I get out of that? So that would be one thing. And then there's also then the whole thing about how do we come together, really, in a way that honors opinions and yet at the same time invites something higher to be birthed, as I spoke about the higher memes or the higher solutions and that are waiting for us to be childlike enough or creative enough or open and willing enough to let a higher idea birth itself. And so we have this opportunity to look at where in our own individual lives we're at an impasse, or where we're in polarity battles in our lives. And then I think the other thing that I would invite the callers to consider is, how can we start showing up differently in the enthusiastic activism that we have for a different world? You know, spiritually motivated social activism is a beautiful thing. And what I think we're seeing is that it's easy to be an activist. I think anybody who has an opinion becomes an activist if they're willing to move forward with it. But how can we be activists in a different way? How can we work with one another in a way that is not so much alienated and aggressive? How can we start being activists by representing higher orders of being, new behaviors, new ways of relating to one another? I think that all of this really comes up for us to grow from as we look at this whole budget thing that's gone on and will continue to go on until there becomes a groundswell of growth in consciousness, until that 100th monkey phenomenon within all of us collectively says, okay, we're done with this. We are really ready. I mean, our elected officials can keep going at it if they choose to, but we are ready to say yes to something more. So I would just toss this into our collective think tank and see where it goes.
That's great, Roger. Before Carol goes on, I this is a perfect opportunity for me to interject that right now Association for Global New Thought is in its season called the Season for Interfaith and Intercultural Celebration. And in answer to your question, Roger, about how do we show up as activists in this new consciousness, AGNT really does try to offer programs that demonstrate to citizen leaders in the community, associated often with New Thought churches, but not always, can actually convene conversations where they invite people from all aspects of the community, some of whom might be polarized. And in this particular case, it shows up in religious and cultural differences and how that causes violence and discord within the community, especially among youth. So basically, practicing dialogue and new ways of communicating with people that you've seen as other, and teaching other people in the community how to have these civil, constructive dialogues that come from a place in the heart rather than a place in the social or political dialogue. We've had tremendous success with just a little bit of effort into demonstrating how a solution like this would actually show the community that a different level of consciousness was possible if somebody was willing to take the lead and be it and just sort of jump out of this other nonsense that we often hear about. So that
can
said,
I say one
for
thing?
That little... Mm-hmm, sure, go
can
ahead.
I say one thing on that, Barbara. You put it so clearly. New ways of being always precede breakthrough ideas, new ideas. And we have to anchor the new ways of being, and then the new ideas will come forth.
Absolutely. So, Carol, did you want to take some time and speak about an issue that's on top for a lot of people, but from this particular spiritual lens?
Well, we've all been just, as Roger said, grieving for what's going on with gun violence. And what's perpetrated, for the most part, by young males. And I want to pick up something that I heard Dr. Matthew Fox say many years ago at one of our ministers' conferences. He was expressing a positive view that he saw in sort of the embryonic stages, the rise of authentic masculinity that was coming through symbols such as the Green Man that he was beginning to see everywhere in Europe. But I want to quote one thing he said. He said, real masculinity has to do with wisdom and strength, not external power and weaponry. And I think our culture has not given young boys a true picture of what it means to be a masculine, a strong, wise man. And a misunderstanding of spirituality, too, that's something that happens in the media. It happens in entertainment, where men who are somewhat feminized are considered weak. But that's not the truth. The difference is between a soldier and a warrior. Matthew Fox said, a soldier is someone to whom you give a weapon with the orders, kill or be killed. He's defending his turf. We see this all over the place. A warrior is a mystic who believes in love, truth, and beauty. He defends the common good. A warrior defends values, the earth, justice, and peace, which means, of course, that women are warriors, too. I love what Rochelle told us. I'm going to really look that up. Because masculine and feminine are not polar opposites. They're two aspects of the same thing, life. And all life contains each in various levels of expression. So in our culture, a real man has been described as top gun. But true warriors are best described as brave heart. So, you know, would we call Jesus, Buddha, Gandhi top guns? No, they used no weapons. And, of course, Dr. King, too. No external power. But you would refer to them as brave hearts. Muhammad Ali, who refused to fight an unjust war and had to forfeit his status as champion, he had to give up the outer symbol of his masculinity to be a true warrior, not just a fighter. These are warriors with brave hearts. And, of course, there are many, many more in our culture. Dr. Roger Teal is one of them, and all of the men of New Thought that I know personally, I see them as spiritual warriors, not as fighters. And these men, King, Gandhi, all of them, knew what to defend. And they did it with words, nonviolent protest, actions which were congruent with the values. I was especially interested in Fox's remark that all warriors are mystics. And I've been thinking about that for a long time, ever since, in a mystic being someone who knows deeply that we're all one, that we are inseparable from each other, the earth, the universe, and spirit, the cause of it all, and that the attributes of the source, both masculine and feminine, are in every one of us. A mystic knows we're inseparable from that creative process of the masculine and feminine joining together to create something. And as Rochelle said, we cannot do it without the feminine, but we also need the authentic masculinity. I see the lack of that as having something to do with the desperation of young males. And of course, there are other contributing factors. Of course, there are. It could be economic. It could be what's going on at home. It could be misuse of drugs, trying to find that spirit through false means. But overarching all of it, I see it as a misunderstanding of what masculinity is. So love becomes the motivating energy in a warrior, not anger, not hate, but as Roger said, love. Someone said, a mystic falls in love with the world despite its history. And so a spiritual man is never a cynic. That's the coward's way. And it's lazy to be cynical. Anybody can be a cynic. It's easy to draw the line in the sand and declare that they are the enemy. But the brave heart knows it takes more real strength and power to negotiate than it does to fire at someone. So a spiritual boy is taught to believe in himself. And this is where I grieve, Roger. My heart just, if this is hard for me when I see this, because I see these young boys just being lost. And so he will go where he goes to get counsel, and it could be in a gang. It's a tribal thing. But he wants to learn from other men. And so he goes to those who access power. But our young boys, we need to help them access wisdom from within.
Yes.
So the spiritual man loves the feminine wherever he meets it, in himself, in nature, in women, in policy, in strategy, because the feminine is always inclusive and respectful of diversity. So you'll never hear a true man ridiculing women or denigrating them. I'm going to finish up by quoting Ernest Holmes, who started this teaching in the early 20th century. He said, I choose certain women to work with me. He was surrounded by women practitioners, women ministers, but he also had great friendships with other spiritual men whom he trained and set free to take this word out into the world. So I see one of the things that's desperately needed is the enfolding of young males into this spiritual masculinity that is emerging and helping them become free from the need to gain external power, but rather to develop internal power.
Absolutely. Roger, did you have a... That's beautiful and powerful.
Beautiful.
Did you have something?
Couldn't agree more. Thank you. Thank you.
So I think that maybe it gives us an indicator that one place where we could even increase our work in New Thought and in our other communities of all different spirits and religions and not even non-denominational communities is if we could put more attention into providing forums for these young men so that they have some place positive to go, as you say, Carol,
yeah,
to seek the wisdom and the training, and not just by default end up with these horrible mentors that cause a lot of destruction and confusion in their lives, that we need to be more proactive in providing those forums. It was funny because, Carol, when you were first talking about the distinction between a soldier and a warrior, I thought you said soldier and lawyer. And I thought, oh, where's she going with this one?
That's a whole other talk show.
Oh, my goodness. Well, we're getting, you know, as we move forward in our program tonight and get toward the top of the hour, this is the section of time when we want to break you up into small group circles so that you have a chance to share with each other some of the thoughts that have been arising. But in case any of you have to jump off the call before we get to this place, I would like to remind you that you can get a recording of this program, or maybe you want to turn some of your friends on to listening to New Thought on the News. You can go to agnt.org, www.agnt.org, in order to click on New Thought on the News, and you can listen or download a recording of this program free of charge. It's easy to do and easy to find. And next month, on November, the third Thursday of November, we'll have Dr. Kathy Hearn and Dr. Christian Sorensen as our panelists on New Thought on the News. So either of you, Carol or Roger, before we go into the small groups, did either of you want to say anything concluding? Because this is about the time when people start heading for dinner or wherever they're going, and I want to make sure that you get a final word in.
No, I think I'm complete. I want to give these folks time to talk among themselves, because I think it's important when you've heard all of this discourse to be able to express yourself too. So,
okay,
let's
great.
Give them that time.
Roger, any concluding?
I would just say I bless us as we take on the challenging issues of our times and learn to become heart-centered beings.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Thank you both. Thank you so much. Yeah, so let's do that. Let's do what Carol suggests, and we'll be putting all of you on the call into small groups of 4 or 5 people each. When the bell rings, an announcement will be made that you're now in your breakout group, and we'd like you to facilitate yourselves. So an easy way to do this, because you can't see each other, is to start by going around and introducing yourself. Then you go around again, but this time go around alphabetically by first name. And take a minute or two to share your thoughts with your small group. And then when we're just about done with this breakout session, about a minute to go, a bell will sound and it'll indicate that your session is ending. So Penny is going to put you in your small groups, and as soon as you hear the bell ring, you'll be ready to talk. I hope that you all enjoyed the breakout discussion, and I think that we're complete for the day, and I thank you all for attending this session, and I hope that you'll listen to the recording, tell people about the program, and that we'll see you back here next month. So thank you very much, and have a wonderful month.